hello again to all of you out there. Hello, welcome once again to another edition of the Arts Magazine Show, which you are listening to live today here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. We've got some fun things to talk to you about today. And I think no matter what your ethnic or religious breakdown is, you will enjoy the program today. First, we're going to journey out to Blue Springs, where the Blue Springs City Theater will be presenting. Well, it was actually based on a book series. It was called the Pioneer Girl series, but most of you know it as Little House on the Prairie. There are stage versions. This one is called A Laura Ingalls Wilder Christmas. And with us to tell us all about this, I know what you're thinking. Is this anything like the TV show or the movies or even the books? We will find out. The director, Nancy Effort, is going to tell us all that. She is a director, an actress, a teacher, many things. One of her plays that I enjoy the most, you know, is the Annie Oakley, you know, the song we play as we open the show. She actually directs that show, or has directed that show on several occasions.
I have. I've done two versions of the revised Annie Get Your Gun, as well as I was in the original play in the Independence City Theater a long time ago of Annie Get Your Gun. So,
yeah.
We always have to sing along with your lead-in music.
That's right. And gunplay probably doesn't figure into this particular show.
No.
No. We shall find out. It's called A Laura Ingalls Wilder Christmas. And if you've never read the books, and I'm always surprised that how many people have read all of those Laura Ingalls Wilder books. It was called the Pioneer Girl series. And, of course, Michael Landon fell in love with those stories, as I recall reading the story. And so that's why the television series came about. This is called A Laura Ingalls Wilder Christmas. It's a Christmas show being presented by the Blue Springs City Theater. Nancy Effort is her name. She's the director. And she brought along three of the actors in the show. Eric Baer is with us. He plays the role of Pa. He has done three shows with the Blue Springs City Theater and one show in Independence. Cassie Crawford is with us. She plays the role of Ma. She's very young looking for Ma. I doubt that those mothers on the prairie look that young. This is her first time on stage. Is it the first time on the radio as well?
Yes, it is.
Oh, well.
First time for a lot of things.
Well, let's not go that far. Abby Miller is with us as well. She plays the role of Laura. Now, that's the character that all the little girls love to play. You get to play it. Do you feel honored?
Yes.
Love those one-word answers. Were you familiar with the character, the books, or the show before you had a chance to play Laura?
I have never read any of the books or even seen the TV shows at all.
So you're a director's dream.
Absolutely.
What about Pa? Now, you told me before the show you had never seen the show either.
No, not a one. I grew up in a farm in the middle of Nebraska, so I didn't feel like I needed to watch, but basically was a reality show of my life, but without the tractors and the electricity and things.
That's right. Well, it's been pretty good. So you could even say this was a role you were born to play, perhaps.
Yeah, you could say that.
Well, I just said it. Abby Miller plays the role of Laura. Eric Baer is Pa, and if I didn't say so before, Cassie Crawford plays the role of Ma in the show, which I guess is based not on one of her books, but on... What did you say before?
Well, actually, the play takes place in Burr Oak, Iowa. It was a year that the Ingalls family lived in a hotel, which is basically a glorified tavern, and Wayside Inn. They had been in Walnut Grove for quite some time, and they had a terrible season there. There was a terrible drought that came through the country that was preceded by a horde of locusts or grasshoppers that really decimated the crops. And Pa had a great wanderlust. He wanted to keep moving and traveling, and so he got the opportunity to manage this hotel in Burr Oak. And so he packed up the family, which in essence was how Pa packed up the family. He started taking everything that was built and rebuilt it into a wagon, and they loaded their wagon up and started going to Burr Oak. And it was backtracking, according to what Laura kept telling him, because the whole goal was to keep going west. Well, they were west at that point in time, and this is the 1870s. But when they were in this 1 year in Burr Oak, Laura never put any of this particular adventure in her books. It is in her journals and her writings, which she and her husband, Almanzo, actually settled and retired and have a beautiful home in Mansfield, Missouri. So we had this great Missouri connection to Laura Ingalls Wilder. And there you can see her writings. She wrote on Big Chief yellow tablets with pencil. And this is one of the stories that are probably going to make another book. They're looking at some of her other journal writings to put things back in that she wrote about. She was a wonderful, wonderful journal writer and wrote these stories. And there are several that have never made any of the book series.
Yeah, so it was her journal. That's the word I was looking for before, mm-hmm. based on her journals, which mm-hmm. someone had to have gone to a lot of trouble to read the journals, put it all in context, and create a play out of it. Do you know much about that story?
I do. This was actually an artist-in-residency program for the Coterie Theater, and it's really interesting because the Coterie had a project in... 2007 that the author Laurie Brooks came, and she did an artist in residency program here, and she put together this program that wrote this play, A Laura Ingalls Wilder Christmas, because it was a Christmas story. And that's one reason I presented it to the Blue Springs Community Theater, in that they were looking for a Christmas show, and this one had been done here at the Coterie many years ago, but never as a full-blown stage for a community theater. And so I really got intrigued with that, and we've taken for the play. In every book that Laura Ingalls published or was published for her, there's music. She talks about music, and especially Pa's fiddle playing and different things. There's actually a Laura Ingalls Wilder songbook. We have taken many of the songs from that songbook, put them into the play as transition pieces and as background music, and we have what I call my church choir. We have a little choir of voices, a few adults, a few kids, and they sing and perform music that is mentioned in her books as well, and Christmas music. We have a big Christmas sing-along, so when you're coming as our audience, be prepared. You're going to have some sing-along.
Now, I know. Now, this might be complicated, so bear with us, those of you in the audience who know. But for those of us that don't, and I have to include myself in the don't category, it's confusing sometimes where they were settling, at what time, and what place. And the contrast was this before the action of the television series commenced? Did this happen before that?
They actually lived in Walnut Grove for quite, a couple times. They kept going back there because there was a tie. They had a familial tie back there. Ma, Caroline, had a sister that was also in that area that moved, as well as Pa had a sister that moved into those areas in and out. And so Walnut Grove pretty much became their home, but they actually settled. And where Ma and Pa are buried is in DeSmet, South Dakota.
South Dakota.
Yeah, the state went out of my mind. DeSmet, and that's where they actually lived. And she and Laura met and married Almanzo there. But the weather was really bad. Almanzo had some very bad health. He'd had a stroke actually, and they thought they would go south to get warmer, so they went to South Missouri, and that's where they ended up settling. So we have Laura and Almanzo living in South Missouri, and that's where they lived their life out. And their daughter Rose was born there, and their daughter Rose actually became an internationally famous author herself. She actually had written for the Kansas City Star at one time.
No, really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, and she, I guess you told me a little bit of this earlier, she got her mother to write some of these?
Yes. She actually, Laura had never written any of her stories down. But Laura developed a wonderful descriptive type of storytelling, because when her sister, older sister Mary, became blind from she had two illnesses. She had measles and then she had rheumatic fever. And she became blind. And Pa said at one time, Laura, you're going to have to be Mary's eyes. So when Laura and Mary would go out, Laura would describe everything around her in such perfect detail, microscopic detail. And so when Rose was talking to Laura, her mother, about how she grew up, Laura was sort of a Renaissance woman. She grew up in the late 1800s. transitioned through the 1900s, and Laura actually did not publish any of her books until she was about 60 years old. And so she had this wonderful span, historically span, and she just would get up in the middle of the night, she would write these stories, they would come to her, she'd have a little tablet laying out everywhere. And when you toured their home there in Mansfield, Missouri, there's a little desk, a little separate bedroom off of their main bedroom where she and Almanzo had, that was a little, like a fainting couch, if you will, where she would sleep at night. And Laura was only just barely 4'11". Laura was a very tiny little girl. And Almanzo would be asleep, and so she would get up in the middle of the night not to disturb him. She would go to her little writing desk, write down on these little Big Chief tablets, and then that's how the stories became.
Well, Big Chief
tablets. Big Chief tablets. That's right.
Realistic, but odd at the same time.
Well, they were very poor. Her books did not become popular and, I guess, money makers until many years later. And actually, Laura didn't see a lot of that wealth come to her from the big series that became. And it's interesting, one of the things that they left the house exactly like it was when Laura passed. Now, Almanzo, her husband, was almost 15 years older than she, so he had passed several years earlier, that on her dining room table, and it's very interesting, you can see all of these birthday cards and thank you cards from children all over the country and abroad thanking her for the stories.
Oh, sure.
It's very sweet.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some of the characters. Eric Vera plays the role of Paul. How do you see him? So you have nothing to disturb your vision, and no books, and television, anything. So you come at this pretty fresh, just you and the director.
When I was probably 11, I think I read On the Banks of Plum Creek and then Farmer Boy.
Uh-huh.
And the only thing I really remember about Farmer Boy is the trick he used to make his pumpkins bigger. That's not particularly useful for this play. But
fertilizer?
Milk.
Milk. Oh, but darn.
So, probably, yeah, there's no preconceived notions. How I had been envisioning Pa is he's very, you know, very pragmatic, very salt of the earth, very this is what needs to be done. I mean, this was the 1870s. There was no TV. There was no radio. It's basically work or starve to death. And so that's basically how I've been playing Pa, is X needs to be done or Y won't happen.
Just pretty much the attitude that the pioneer people had to have, though.
And so that's, and I think I started off probably doing a little bit of disservice to Pa originally. It was very, I read the characters very, very flat.
Oh.
I mean, not quite deadpan, but it was not nearly quite the emotion.
Not as philosophical or advice-giving as really Michelangelo played the part.
So what I did, and this is going to set everybody in Missouri, is going to set their teeth on edge, but I tried to model this character of how I perceive Tom Osborne to be, and how I used him as one of my models of how would a pragmatic kind of a philosopher dad be, and like, well, hey, what about this guy? So from Nebraska. So that's
well,
why
sure,
him,
yeah.
So.
Tell me a little bit about the comparisons. Now, the Nebraska you grew up in was more modern.
Yes.
As compared to that, but I'll bet there were some things that were
absolutely. I mean, I grew up on a farm. Now, we didn't have any animals, but it was still very much, you know, work, get up in the middle of the morning, you know, work, probably get up 6, 7 in the morning, go out to the fields, work until lunchtime, go in, eat a quick lunch, go back out and work until dinner time, eat dinner, go back out and work till you couldn't see anymore.
Yeah.
And it was just repeat, 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 repeat. And so there wasn't a lot of time for anything else. So even though we, instead of going back and forth on mules or back and forth on oxen, we use a Chevy Silverado. And instead of, you know, sitting around and playing the fiddle, we had the Royals at night.
That's
and
right.
We had television. You know, 4 channels.
Sure.
But it was essentially the same thing. I won't say it was a hard scrapple life, but it wasn't what my kids have now, that's
of
for sure.
Of course not. Of course not. What about Ma? Cassie Crawford playing the role of Ma.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, let's hear about how you approach Ma from your perspective.
Well, from my perspective, I have only read Little House on the Prairie.
Uh-huh.
I haven't seen the show, and so, and with no acting experience prior to this, when I sat down with Nancy, we both collaborated together and just, we built Ma together, based off of who Ma really was as a person in real life. And at this particular time setting of this play, she had just lost a child. a 10-month-old baby boy or 9 months, something like that. And that was their only son. So she is just frustrated and just kind of bereft. She's bereft and just going around working hard and just kind of out of her mind and not really paying attention. And I can relate in a sense because I'm a mother of four children, four little boys, and I stay at home with them. So all day it's just children and chores and children and chores. And so I was able to take that aspect of my life and put it into this character of Ma where, you know, no, don't be complaining about that. We have work to do, you know, or I have work to do. And so, yeah, I feel really, really close to this character. And it's really been a joy to find out how to display that through emotion and words on the stage.
Did they have to be such stoic? The expression she used that really caught my ear there was, oh, don't worry about that. There's work to do. Tell people something like that today, and you just get a look.
Well,
you just get a funny look.
I think Eric said it best, is this was the job at hand. This is what made life go. This year that we're looking at Baroque, is they were actually living in, you know, rooms of this hotel, and this tavern, so to speak, because the whole goal was to keep gathering money, gathering things together to keep going forward, to find your dream. And I don't think stoic necessarily as it's just that's the way life was, mm-hmm. is that if you didn't plant the garden, you didn't eat. If you didn't take care of your animals, you couldn't get from point A to point B, nor plant the fields to make your living. If you didn't get up and everybody in the family worked together for a common goal, you know, it just didn't work out. It just, you know, everybody had to work together. There was work to do, and many hands made lots of work, like, you know, whatever the little credo thing is, light work of, I don't know, light
hand. Many
light.
Hands make light work.
There we go. There we go. See? That's why I have lots of people around me to make me look brilliant. Not at all. Not at all. But that's just, it wasn't so much as a stoicism as pragmatic. This is the way life is.
Mm-hmm. You know, Abby, your character, for good or ill, for your part, your perspective will be interesting on this, was the popular favorite on television, and from what I've heard, popular favorite in the books as well. Everybody loved Laura. How do you feel about that? It's nice to be liked, I suppose, but it puts some pressure on you as well.
Well, it's...
Is it? Do you feel like you have a lot to live up to?
Yeah, a lot. It can be a little hard.
Mm-hmm. Overwhelming.
Yeah,
perhaps?
Overwhelming mm-hmm. is a better word to say. But with such a wonderful director that I have, she makes it a whole lot easier.
What's Laura like as a young lady? We know more about her as she got older, but what was she like as a young lady?
She really liked to know whenever Ma was sad because of baby Freddy, she really wanted to know what she could do to help her. But then Ma wouldn't let her do that sometimes. Mm. She would just say, nothing is wrong, it's all fine. But in Laura's heart, she really knew something was wrong with Ma.
Mm-hmm. Later on, when her sister started having the problems, how did that perspective change? How do you play it that way? This probably doesn't play into the story at all.
No, Mary is still has her vision. This is a few years prior to where she was ill.
Yeah, but did you consider yourself, you know, kind of a helpmate for people in the family? How do you see Laura as herself, you know? Well, that's a complicated question, I guess.
I'll give her a little jump start. She loved to be with Pa and in the barn. She sort of took on some of the boy jobs, I think.
Uh-huh.
So you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah,
like Nancy said, she loved to help out with Pa and always see what he was doing. And she loved the horses, Pip and Patty. She loved them. They were her best friends. And whenever she needed to talk to somebody, she would always go to them.
The journal writing started as a young lady?
Not really.
Not really?
No, not really. She really, as she would retell the stories. A lot of them were in letters or some of the communication that she had with family members as she was growing up. But very, very, there really wasn't a lot of journal writing until her daughter kept asking her questions. And when Laura was an adult woman, when they lived in Mansfield, there was a little farm newsletter that went out, and they were always asking people to contribute. And actually, Laura became quite a prolific writer with this little farm journal about how to do certain things because, again, realizing that she'd lived through a lot of different things, a lot basic survival things, as Eric alluded to in the book Farmer Boy, which was really important to see and hear a lot of the, or actually see a lot of the rudimentary things that went on from day-to-day farm life. And so it's really important for us to look at those things, too, again, to see where we've come from. You know, we really need to know our basic history. I totally believe that, to get a true appreciation of what we have.
Sure. I suppose I should give the basics. Laura Ingalls Wilder Christmas opens Friday night, December 6th at 7:30 p.m. at the Blue Springs City Theater. Performances continue then on Saturday the 7th at 7:30. Always a matinee on Sunday. Sunday the 8th at 2 o'clock p.m. A Thursday performance then on the 12th of December at 7:30. Friday the 13th at 7:30. Saturday the 14th at 7:30. And an afternoon matinee on Sunday the 15th at 2 o'clock p.m. at the Blue Springs City Theater. It's actually part of the campus of the Blue Springs High School in Blue Springs. The address, 2000 Northwest Ashton Drive, Blue Springs. The number to call for more information, 816-228-0137 or online at bluespringscitytheater.com, spell theater with an R-E at the end, bluespringscitytheater.com, where the prairies of the Midwest will come alive on the stage of the Blue Springs City Theater for a Laura Ingalls Wilder Christmas based on, I guess, the journals of Laura Ingalls Wilder. What kind of prop-wise and costume-wise had to have been a challenge for you?
Zero.
Zero?
There are no props. There is no set.
Uh-oh.
And each person has one costume.
Ah.
This is a memory play. This is a memory play because the very first character you will meet is the adult Laura talking about this year in the remembrance, and basically this is the way, the last thing that this person basically says is, this is how I remember it in Burr Oak, Iowa. And then it goes back, and you see this as a memory play. So our set consists of two old trunks, and that's it.
Wow. No,
no properties, no chairs.
Everybody stands?
Nope. They don't.
And they sit on the ground?
No, they don't.
Oh, well.
And
see,
this is a big mystery here. Our trunks become many, many different things. And it's basically written that way in the script, as well as we have a wonderful sound effects person because it's all pantomime. And so we had a wonderful opportunity just this past Saturday to visit with Mr. Ralph Goldsmith, who is the proprietor of, I'm going to get this bad. It's the Pioneer Trails Adventures out of Independence. He is the gentleman that has the mules and the covered wagons and the sleighs that give people rides, but we were able to visit with him. And he helped us. He helped Laura and Pa. They fed the mules. They harnessed. They drove the wagon just to get that idea, that muscle memory, how to do these things. So
that's probably for Eric. That was probably a flash of the past.
a little bit. I'd actually not driven a wagon before. I'd ridden horses at the saddle, but this was new.
Yeah.
And it was really cold.
What about the girls? What was that like?
It was very fun. It taught me a lot to do with the pantomiming and, like when I'm feeding them, like, what to do while I'm doing that to tell that they're mules and they weigh a lot.
Yeah, do you appreciate the way of life you have now, having pseudo-speaking, lived through this experience?
Yeah, but I also think it would be interesting to see what it was back then.
Oh, for how long? Yeah. For half a day.
So you missed your hot shower and your microwave popcorn.
The show was what, 2 hours?
I know.
Yeah. And all the moving around they had to do. That couldn't have been easy.
It wasn't, but it was so, they had it down to a methodical science. They knew exactly what to do, how much to take, how much they couldn't take, and it was just amazing to when you read how absolutely, if you will, brilliant that Paul was with constructing things out of thin air. Everything that they had, their tabletop became a part of the box of the wagon, and there were just a lot of things that, you know, and anything that they needed furniture-wise, they never worried about it because Paul could build it, or if he couldn't build it, they probably didn't need it.
Well, she's probably lucky then that the journals and the letters survived all of that.
Well, and actually, again, she wrote all of these things in her later years.
Oh.
Yeah, and so it was just, again, memories and things would just, as we do. So I'm not a good journal person. My husband is wonderful at that. But I keep thinking, well, he's writing all the details. I won't have to worry about it. But then when you start thinking, you know, and that's why she would get up at night or whatever she was doing, she'd have a little notepad by her because thoughts would come to her and she'd write them down. So thank goodness that she's done that. So.
Well, if you're a fan of Laura Ingalls Wilder, the books, the Pioneer Girls series, the television show was produced, directed, and acted in by Michael Landon, or anything that involves with that, you might want to check out Laura Ingalls Wilder, Christmas, opening on December the 6th, Friday, December 6th, running 2 weekends, the 6th, 7th, 8th, 8th being a Sunday afternoon matinee, then the next weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday evenings, a Sunday afternoon matinee at the Blue Springs High School campus, that's where it is, 2000 Northeast Ashton Drive, Blue Springs. It's part of the Blue Springs High School campus, and they have some good directions, as I recall, online at bluespringscitytheater.com, or you can call for more information at 816-228-0137. I want to thank my guests for being with us and telling us about the old days. Yeah. Nancy Eppert, the director, she's directed many other things and acted as well. Eric Baer plays the role of Pa, Cassie Crawford the role of Ma, and Abby Miller plays the role of Laura in A Laura Ingalls Wilder Christmas, running December 6th through the 15th at the Blue Springs City Theater. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
We're going to take our break. When we return, a little change of gears, but still very interesting. Think you'll have fun with this. Gather the kids by the radio. When we return, you're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM.
Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare at your local theaters. Hunger Heads, the wait is over. Katniss Everdeen is back for another round of futuristic gladiator combat in The Hunger Games: Catching Fire. Fans of the books and original movies should enjoy this beautifully produced action flick that's a notch above the first installment. Jennifer Lawrence carries the franchise with her fierce and confident performance that more than makes up for the movie's sometimes sluggish pace. The combat may not be over, but Lawrence is the clear winner. Kansas City native Lynn Cohen plays Mags, a senior citizen who's drafted into the competition. Vince Vaughn stars in the genial comedy Delivery Man, a remake of the 2011 Canadian movie Starbuck. Vaughn plays a middle-aged slacker who discovers that, as a sperm donor, he's fathered over 500 kids, and they're suing the fertility clinic to learn their dad's identity. Vaughn is likable, and Chris Pratt gives a memorably funny performance as his Bush League lawyer. It doesn't all work, but Delivery Man is a sweet-natured flick that abandons modern cynicism in favor of old-fashioned sentiment. Strong performances by Matthew McConaughey and Jared Leto give a big boost to Dallas Buyers Club, a true story about the early days of the AIDS crisis. McConaughey plays Ron Woodruff, a drug-addicted, homophobic cowboy who learns that he's HIV positive and has only weeks to live. He then skirts the law by forming a buyer's club in order to get unapproved foreign medicines into the U.S. Gritty and sometimes profane, Dallas Buyers Club is a realistic look at a difficult chapter in our recent history. Its conclusion is abrupt, but expect Oscar nominations for McConaughey and Leto for their skillful turns. Also opening this week, Daniel Radcliffe leaves Harry Potter far behind with Kill Your Darlings, a biopic about the early years of beat poet Allen Ginsberg. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI-FM.
Freeze Frame! Welcome to This Week on Stage, underwritten by KC Stage Magazine, your most comprehensive source for performing arts in Kansas City. Find out what's playing at kcstage.com. Opening this week, Here We Come A-Caroling, Quality Hill Playhouse. Paul Messner Puppets presents Herschel and the Hanukkah Goblins, the White Theater. Almost Maine, UMKC Theater. This week only, Silly Stuff, Puppetry Arts Institute. Still playing this week, Forever Plaid, Chestnut Fine Arts Theater. The Wiz, the Coterie Theater. Your Hit Parade, Quality Hill Playhouse. Christmas in Song, Quality Hill Playhouse. Never Too Late, New Theater Restaurant. Rudolph, the Recycled Reindeer, plus Vaudeville Review and the Waterglass Symphony. Martin City Melodrama and Vaudeville Company. Every Christmas Story Ever Told and Then Some, Paradise Playhouse Dinner Theater. A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, Slightly Off Broadway Theater. Closing this week, Musical Mondays, 2013, Musical Theater Heritage, JFK, A Ghostly Evening, Melting Pot, KC. These shows can be reviewed online on your website at kcstage.com. Over 200 performing arts organizations listing auditions, performances, and events. Week on Stage is a public service of KC Stage Magazine and 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
The October 1st deadline for implementation of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act has passed. So what's happening? How can uninsured people become insured? What are the rules, and how can you help make this a success? Scott Lakin and Sarah Starnes, both social workers and both involved in helping people sign up for the Affordable Care Act, are going to be our guests on the All Souls Forum this Wednesday at 6 p.m. right here on KKFI.
And welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hoke, your host. You can have a lot of fun out on the prairie, I guess. But now we're going to move more into the city. But then, at least in our minds, at least, we're going to go back to, probably Eastern Europe. We'll find out. Krista Blackwood is with us. She is the Director of Cultural Affairs for the Jewish Community Center of Kansas City. We might have someone call in here in a bit. In fact, they're calling now on the cell phone. So while I'm answering the phone,
sure.
Krista, tell us a little bit about Herschel and the Hanukkah Goblins.
Herschel and the Hanukkah Goblins. At the Jewish Community Center's White Theater, we have decided to try and add wonderful things to the holiday season of the Kansas City area. There's great, wonderful secular traditions and sacred traditions. You've got your Nutcracker and your Messiah and your Christmas Carol and your Laura Ingalls Wilder Christmas. But what do we do for Hanukkah? And so I thought it would be a really wonderful idea to try and create a show that we could do hopefully on a yearly basis in celebration of Hanukkah. And my first thought was Paul Messner Puppets. So I spoke with Paul, and we had several ideas we kicked around, but we finally landed on this adaptation of Herschel and the Hanukkah Goblins. It's a pretty famous children's book by Eric Kimmel, and it's one of the most beloved children's books of PJ Library, which is a service of our Jewish Federation here in Kansas City, designed to provide Jewish-themed books to families with small children. And Herschel and the Hanukkah Goblins is one of the most popular ones, and so it seemed to be a home run to have Paul adapt it in a brilliant and dramatic way. And so we've been talking about it for about a year now, and it's about to become a reality. It opens on Friday.
Yeah, and we need Paul to call back in. Somehow the line dropped. So, Paul, you know the number to call. There it comes. There it comes. Okay, we'll try this again. Try to maintain. Okay, Paul, is this you again? Okay, we're going to try. We're going to try again.
It's very exciting. We've got Paul live at the theater across town. He was supposed to be in with us today, but is involved in getting everything set up so we can open on Friday. They loaded in this morning after we closed our fabulous production of Les Miserables last night. And so they're very busy over there at the White Theater, so he's joining us from piles of sawdust and puppets amok over there at the Jewish Community Center.
Yeah, she can't hear you, but I can. Is there a headset you could put on, maybe, Krista? We have Paul on the line. This is Paul Messner. He is the director, the creator of his own puppet company and children's workshop company as well. Boy, Paul, you have worked globally. You're globally known for your puppets, but you're based right here in Kansas City. You have studied puppetry internationally. I believe you told me last time in France and appeared all over the world with your puppets.
Yes, I'm pretty busy and very content and happy, though, to call Kansas City home.
Yeah. Well, where do you get the ideas for some of your stories that you work with the puppets? For instance, this one, Herschel and the Hanukkah Goblins.
This is I'm always keeping an eye out for good books.
Uh-huh.
And I can't remember how this one came to me. People often bring me books and say, hey, we love that. Our family loves this book. Can, you know, take a look at this and see if it's something you want to do. And some of those are, I think, not always appropriate for puppetry because puppets are different kinds of actors, and they do certain things well, and they do certain things not as well. So I'm usually trying to stack the deck in the favor of the puppets by choosing a story that puppets can act out appropriately and successfully.
Is it true you can tell, I don't know, you can make some points with puppets that you can't necessarily make with a live actor? I've heard people say that.
Oh, the puppets are they don't complain. they don't eat. They don't care if the costumer stitches the costume right to them. Georgiana Laundrie has been doing the costumes. Georgiana Laundrie began doing the costumes. And
yes.
I think the whole first, it was like, she said that one day. She said, I can just, you know, they're not going to complain. And she didn't say not complain, but, yeah, we went over this marvelous ability of puppets simply to, you know, that's a strength. And of course, puppets can tumble around on the ground and fight and no one gets hurt. And kids instinctively know that. Sometimes adults get, what about the children? But kids know that they're just puppets. It's an opportunity. You know, puppets can leap through the air and stop and, you know, turn back to the ground. And there's, you know, many, many things. But they can't do things that an actor can do. And they can't do all the things that an actor can do. But we try and, you know, adapt and make up for that and account for that in the blocking, scripting, and writing of the piece.
Yeah, this particular offering is called Herschel and the Hanukkah Goblins. Would you like to do a brief synopsis of the story for people? It's a Hanukkah. I can't say Christmas play. It's a Hanukkah holiday play.
Holiday.
Based on how Krista goes.
Holiday.
Yeah, that's right. You got to get that sound. Based on a book by Eric Kimmel. Tell me about these goblins. Goblins can't be good.
No, goblins are bad, and they're haunting this village. Herschel is an actual person who lived in the 1780s, and Herschel of Osterpol. And then the story came to Mr. Kimmel through a couple different sources, and he published it. And it's a marvelous story of how Herschel is a trickster in the trickster tradition of Till Eulenspiegel, and he's a Jewish trickster character. And he comes to the village and says, I can do that. And he goes up to the synagogue, and there's several things the rabbi tells him he has to do. He has to observe Hanukkah for 8 nights, and he has to light the candles every night and say the prayers. And on the 8th night, the king of the goblins will come, and he has to light the candles. So Herschel has to figure this out. And Herschel succeeds, of course.
So these goblins snuff out the menorah candles, things like that?
Not just that.
Not just that.
They throw the potato latkes on the floor.
Uh-oh.
They spill the oil. They're in everybody's business.
Are they able to ruin Hanukkah?
They've tried, and they've succeeded for many years.
Uh-oh.
And this village that Herschel comes to, it's the first night of Hanukkah. So he's very excited because he's not quite home yet. He was way late on the way there, and he's looking forward to being home. And so he says, at least I get to spend the first night with, you know, with some of my friends and enjoying Hanukkah for the first night before he gets home. So instead, he has to spend 8 nights there, but he saves Hanukkah.
Yeah, that's a good reminder for people. Hanukkah actually stretches over a number of days.
8 nights, yeah.
8 nights?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a charming story, and it's one all you don't have to be Jewish to enjoy. And it has a universal appeal of both tricksterism and also the appreciation of faith. And of course, the central message of Hanukkah is that no one should tell anyone else who and how to pray.
Well, of course, yeah. Based on a book by Eric Kimmel, and I assume that he got his ideas from perhaps an ancient fable or Hanukkah story, something of that nature?
There was an existing book he mentioned in one of his forewords, that and a play that he received. I think one was in Yiddish and the other was in Hebrew. I'm not sure about that. One might have been in German, but he found them. Or maybe some Ukrainian language, or Russian or something. I'm up there. That's where Ostropol is, in current-day Ukraine. And so he found these two. One was, I think, performed or written in 1924. The other one was maybe a bit earlier than that.
Yeah, I find it here. A creative adaptation of the ancient Hanukkah story in which the Syrians forbade the Jews from worshiping?
That's so the Hanukkah story. So that's...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's kind of a metaphor for Hanukkah in that the Syrians would not let the Jews worship as they wished. They wanted the Jews to assimilate to their rule and their traditions and their styles. And so Herschel and the Hanukkah Goblins, the goblins kind of stand in for the Syrians and Herschel stands in for the Jews.
I see. Metaphorically speaking.
Yeah. Metaphorically speaking. Yeah. And so I would assume that the Syrians didn't throw potato latkes on the floor, and but
that's
still,
correct.
It's, you know, it makes the story come alive for children in ways that I think the history doesn't. So it allows the children to make sense of the Hanukkah story in a way that I think you don't in other ways. So I think it's a fantastic way to provide children with a context for what Hanukkah really means.
And Krista mentioned to me earlier that you would like this perhaps to become one of the holiday traditions here in the area.
My vision would be, yes, that you know, not only Christians go hear the Messiah, they go hear the music. And, you know, it doesn't matter what your religion or your faith, to see a Christmas carol or a nutcracker. And so I would like Herschel and the Hanukkah Goblins to take a place in our Kansas City, vibrant Kansas City tradition of holiday programming. It never ceases to amaze me how much goes on in November and December, and then how well attended everything is. You think, oh, I can't put another Christmas concert or another holiday concert in there because there's so much going on, but people come out in droves this time of year to celebrate, to, you know, maybe to escape the darkness and to be with other people, because that's all of these traditions have one thing in common. It's about bringing light to the darkness.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I think in this time of year, we can celebrate all sorts of traditions and learn from each other, and I hope Herschel and the Hanukkah Goblins will maybe eventually be one of those traditions that we build on here in Kansas City.
Yeah, how did all this come together? How did Paul get involved? I'm always interested in the backstory, as much as you can tell. Anyway.
Well, Paul, I do the High Holiday music, the Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur music at Congregation B'nai Yehuda, which is out there near the Jewish Community Center. And I think, Paul, has it been 5 years that you've been doing the...
Four years.
4 years. He started doing the children's service. He can tell you the story better than I can, but he...
We started integrating, working with the rabbis in the cantor, integrating puppets into the family services for the Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur.
And so I did the service that followed Paul, and so I kept losing people from our service. And I realized, you know, puppets are a really good way to communicate. And so my first idea was take the puppets that he's already built for the congregation B'nai Yehuda and maybe create a show with those same characters. So the first idea I brought to him was a Hanukkah book based on characters he'd built for a Yom Kippur story. But he, you know, he entertained that for a brief moment, and then he said, you know what I'd really like to do? I'd really like to do Herschel. And so I said, well, why not? I mean, Herschel is a more well-known story in the Jewish community, and it provides much more context for making the story appeal to a wider non-Jewish audience as well.
Yeah. Now, we're speaking with Krista Blackwood, Director of Cultural Affairs for the Jewish Community Center, and Paul Messner, the director, creator of the Paul Messner Puppets. They're based right here in Kansas City. They're globally known. He has toured around in all of that, studied puppetry at France, from what I read here.
Italy.
Did you always want to tell your stories, practice your art through puppets?
I started at a pretty young age. I latched onto puppets. I was always my father was a storyteller, as far as he told stories at the dinner table. We all had to listen. and I early on discovered that I liked performing and discovered puppetry not too long after, about the age of 12. And by the time I was 18 or 19, I was pretty sure that's what I was going to try doing for the first couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been 37 years now.
37 years now. You perform, just for so the people will know, you're doing this show, but you also perform around the area on a regular basis. You have a list of shows you perform both at other places and in your home studio.
Right.
He's had a very busy holiday season.
Yeah. We're doing several things besides Herschel. And we perform our nativity December 13th through the 15th at Clayson Holy Trinity Cathedral, and that's a big puppet and a big pageant with puppets. There's about 40 performers in it, about 30 big 8 foot, 7-8 foot tall puppets, and musicians and choir members, and it's that. And then just a few days after that, we're bringing back Old McDonald's Lightning Ranch at Christmas time on the 20th and the 21st of December.
Yeah.
Two more shows at our studio at Linwood, 1006 Linwood.
Yeah. Old McDonald was a notoriously poor speller, you know.
Oh, what is it?
Yeah. He ended everything with E-I-E-I-O. We're speaking with Paulie.
Maybe we'll forget in the show. I haven't heard that one.
Oh, it's a commercial on television. You're probably too busy to watch television these days.
I don't watch enough TV, obviously.
Well, I don't think you really need to. You have enough of your own stuff going on here. I'd like to touch for a second, if you don't mind, the concept that I know when children, especially really young children, are traumatized, often they're communicated with through puppets. Do you know why this might be, Paul?
I have a theory or two on this, and I've read some of the research that people have done using puppets in therapy. The puppet can represent a non-threatening, because it's not living, entity that the child can either just place his own feelings onto or confide in this character that then the therapist is holding and manipulating, but he doesn't have to make eye contact and tell the therapist this thing. And I think it helps the child feel less or opens up, lets the child open up to this object. We see a lot of our audience members, certain members of our audience really attach themselves to puppets. I think some of them, again, especially young kids, and some with learning disabilities, like the puppets because they're either not making eye contact because they don't have real eyes that do that. They have eyes, but they don't make, and they look at the audience, and the audience looks at the puppet's eyes, but they're not doing what human eyes do when they look at each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's less challenging. When eyes lock, you are challenging, basically, each other. You don't avert your eyes. But with a puppet, it doesn't do that. And so maybe that's what helps kids open up the puppet.
Yeah, I imagine that's probably part of it as well. You know, I'm always amazed when you watch, at least when I watch old reruns of old, for instance, Edgar Bergen or television shows,
mm-hmm.
or movie, you'll see them actually communicating. They'll actually talk directly to Mortimer Snerd rather than looking at Edgar Bergen. I always found that so amazing.
Yeah, and those, you know, Sesame Street did this stuff really in the early years when they would have Grover talking to a child on a stoop. And these kids, you know, they arranged the studio so that the kids wouldn't see the puppeteer until the puppeteer puppet arrived. And then the child just looked at the puppet and they caught this, you know, that magic on film. And it's been, enjoyable to watch ever since.
I know. You kind of have a... You know it's a puppet, but there's a part of you that actually forgets as you get into it that this is actually a puppet you're talking to.
I kind of respect the fact that for some kids, it's still a living thing. And that for some kids is frightening, for a very few, but for most kids, it's an enchanting part of it. And so we try and walk that fine line between not creating too much of a mystique about the puppet, but also acknowledging the fact that for some kids, it's very real.
Yeah. And everybody.
And conversely, we don't want things too scary on that same count because it, you want kids will understand that, but little kids especially see things as very real and black and white sometimes.
Now, in Herschel and the Hanukkah Goblins, what kinds of puppets do you use in the show? I know there's rod puppets, there's hand puppets, there's marionette puppets.
No, this is just this show production. It's just rod puppets, and they're large. They're about 4 feet tall, is the scale, as opposed to a human, which is 6 feet. And their faces are almost human scale. And they're manipulated by one to two puppeteers from below. We're all standing, so the puppets appear at about 6 feet high. And the White Theater at the Jewish Community Center is a beautiful theater. And, we're in a studio space most of the time, so we don't have it feels deluxe to us coming into a nice theater like this.
It probably feels like a big room compared to what you're used to.
Sometimes we're on the road, we go to big rooms and in big houses, but this is not too big at all. It doesn't feel too big at all. We definitely built it with the White Theater in mind.
Do you have to tell the puppets to play it really broad and big?
Not the puppets. I got to tell the puppeteers that. But there's quite a bit of subtlety that we can get along that we can do, and discovered over the years that actually when puppets do small subtle movements, it pulls the audience in, draws them in, and they see the subtle movements, and it helps make the puppet more effective.
I'll bet so. I'll bet it would do that. The Paul Mester Puppets present Herschel and the Hanukkah Goblins. The performances begin Friday, November the 29th. That would be this Friday at 11 a.m. Performances continue then Saturday the 30th at 6 o'clock p.m. Then we move to Sunday, December 1st at 2 o'clock p.m. in the afternoon. Monday, December 2nd. At 10 o'clock in the morning, and Tuesday the 3rd of December, also at 10 o'clock in the morning, at the White Theater on the campus of the Jewish Community Center. The number to call for more information is 913-327-8054. Are some of these morning performances geared more towards school children, things of that nature?
They are, but they're open to the general public as well. And some people don't want to come to a show that's filled with school children, but that's my favorite show to come to.
Well, for a puppet show, that would work.
I have as much fun watching the kids watch the puppets as I do the puppets, so it's kind of like two shows in one if you come on one of those student matinees.
I'll bet so. Now, Paul, are you one of the puppeteers for this show?
No, I'm not. I'm just the director. We have a great cast. Mike Corner is performing Herschel along with Victor Rader Wexler, who's performing the voice and helping run the hands some of the time. And Mike's my associate artistic director at Paul Mester Puppets. And Victor Rader Wexler is a real jewel. He is an accomplished actor of stage and screen. He was in New York for many years, and then in L.A. has appeared on many television series that people are familiar with. He's done episodes of Seinfeld and King of Queens, and done movies, and was Boris Badenoff in the Bullwinkle movie.
Oh.
He's a great voice actor and very funny on stage. He's a very, very charming character actor, and we're fortunate that he's now living here in Kansas City. And when I heard his voice at the synagogue, I thought, oh my gosh, that would be a great voice for Herschel.
So you approached him for that?
Yeah, and we've also worked with him on our nativity, so he performs that with us as well. And then we have also a family. We have the Emmons family, Carrie Emmons, and her children, Ryan and Fanula. They've been performing with us for 4 or 5 years. They're homeschooled, so they can get out during the day and be at rehearsals. And then Marcus Small, a young actor who's, I think, fairly new to Kansas City. He rounds out the cast. So there are seven in our cast.
Yeah, and the show, again, is called Herschel and the Hanukkah Goblins. First performances, Friday, November 29th. Performances then continue the next day, Saturday at 6. I know they usually don't have a Friday performance, but this is during the daytime.
It is during the day.
Because the Passover is from sundown to sundown, correct?
And in celebration of Thanksgivica, we're doing it the day after Thanksgiving and through the Thanksgiving weekend.
Oh, that's great.
So, yeah.
That's great. And then December 1st, 2nd, and 3rd as well at the Jewish Community Center's White Theater. It's a wonderful facility. located on, I have that address somewhere, 5801 West 115th Street in Overland Park. It's within viewing distance of the Sprint campus.
Indeed.
You can see it over to the west. I want to thank you both for being with us today. Krista Blackwood, the Director of Cultural Affairs for the Jewish Community Center, and Paul Messner, the director, the creator, sometimes performer of the Paul Messner Puppets, globally known, based right here in Kansas City. You can enjoy them here locally as well. Thank you so much, Paul, for coming on. I appreciate that. I know you must be busy.
Thank you so much. It's been nice to chat.
All right, thank you. And thank you, too, Krista.
Thank you.
For being with us. The Jazz Insider is next. Great jazz. Jazz from 1 to 3. The blues from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hoag. We'll see you next time.